Good evening, it's Dan again. It's March the 9th, 2019. The wolf is at the door, the wolf is at the door. This is a signal being sent out to all my existential shock troops who live in the interzone and those regions that are best understood if you've read Naked Lunch while on shrooms, burrows seeping into your head like worms in your skull. Yes, indeed, it's Saturday night. And I think it's Saturday night or Friday night that Elton John says is a great night for fighting. It's one or the other. I don't think it's Sunday night. That wouldn't work out. Good little people need to show up for work the next day and work their slave jobs. They need to get a lot of sleep Sunday night. But Friday night's a great night for fighting, probably Saturday too. But it's Saturday night, and I've got Saturday night fever. I'm doing a few podcasts here and drinking some coffee. I don't know. My mood is improved because, I as I've stated in previous podcasts, I had an interview that went well. I didn't feel quite so shitty afterwards. And I don't know. I even think that as long as the odds are, and they're very long odds, I think there's a chance I'll get my IRS check early. I hope there is, because it would be really nice to be able to pay rent and not become homeless. These are nice goals for happy, auspicious things, you know. And I'm not complaining, because it would be a lot worse to have cancer right now. Yeah, I've seen that. I've seen the stage four. It's really quite terrible. It would be terrible to be poor in South Africa. Don't want that job. There are lots of places. Venezuela seems to have no electricity right now. I'm sure that's just random bullshit. Of course, you could say, and again, if you've been listening to me, you know I think Marxists are total crazy fucks. But I also think our government is kind of an imperialist fuck. And going around the world telling people how to live, especially when ostensibly your core principles as a nation is about freedom, it's duplicitous and hypocritical, and it's bullshit. And if you add the fact that we're destroying freedom at home while pretending to defend it abroad, it looks really fucked up. It looks like an abusive situation. You know, if you want to find an abusive family with a problem internal, let me tell you something. It's when you treat your people that way. You basically say, well, we're going to go fuck with this nation in the name of freedom. And then every freedom that your own citizens believes they have is being stripped away slowly. Anyways, I know that's a rant. I didn't want to go too far down that rant hole, but fucking Venezuela, you know? If they cannot get their shit correct, let them fix it. I don't know why we feel it is our job to fix the world when we're so fucking it up. It's just, I don't get it. If we were so good at it, even then, like, when I was a kid, I know, I actually saw this, the Superman movie that came out in 1978, and that Superman movie, it sucks you in. I think that was Francis Ford Coppola. I think he did a pretty good job. It sucks you in. And, you know, it's kind of, you know, kids like to dream about Santa Claus and Superman. They like to dream about superheroes coming in to save the day. But if you really think about Superman, the mythology of Superman, he really is this kind of creature that, you know, is taking away your free will. Part of free will, whether you like it or not, is the free will to make mistakes. So yeah. When we go around the world like we think we're Superman and we're impregnable and we can just fix everyone's problems, and anyone that disagrees with us, well, we can just fire a hellfire missile up their ass or drop some white phosphorus on their homes. This is not a good way to behave. That's the nicest way to put it. And there's zero Christian about it. If you're a Christian and you support these stupid fucking wars, you need to reassess your Christianity. ASAP. Because there is no good reason for these wars. You know, I had a scary thought today, and I didn't really want to talk about it, but it's kind of scary. It's scary because it could quite easily get me labeled as anti-Semitic, and I'm not. I'm not anti-Jew. I hate the fact that I have to say this because I think people should have a right to express ideas without prefacing everything. I'm not a racist. I'm not a homophobe. I'm not an anti-Semite. All those things are true. I might say things that offend you. Guess what? I say things that offend everybody. I say things sometimes that even offend myself. And when appropriate, I apologize. But free speech is way more important than your feelings. It's way more important than my feelings. It might be the last thing, the last line of defense between this and civil war is our right to speak our minds. So yeah, I might say something to offend you. Well, I had a weird thought today, and it's kind of a religious thought. And I should preface this. This is important with the fact that I am not a biblical scholar. I am not. I read the Bible. As a kid, I was raised Catholic, and despite the fact that I didn't really attempt to learn much, I started out life as an atheist, and I was an atheist until I was 42 years old. But yeah, despite my effort on not even trying to learn biblical stuff, you go to a church, you go to chapel, it ends up seeping in. And so after 2012, I started reading the Bible again. And so yeah, do I read the Bible? Do I try to understand it? Do I think that it's a source of wisdom in my life? Yes, all the above. But this does not mean I'm a biblical scholar. This does not mean I have, you know, that you shouldn't listen to my opinion and then also check it with your minister. I need, that is important as boilerplate before I go into this, because this is kind of a radical belief on my part, the one I'm about to express. And it deals with a very dark subject. One that, frankly, we should, you know, be careful treading into those waters. We should, because we need to be careful that we avoid being God. It's God's job to judge. It's not my job to judge. It's not your job to judge. Now, does that mean we should approve? Does that mean we should say I'm okay with A, B, and C? No. Does that mean that we countenance evil? No. And frankly, when it comes to evil and it comes to demons, I think even Jesus was willing to pull out a machine gun. That's my opinion. When it comes to defending yourself, defending your family, defending your kids. Yes, all of that's okay to defend yourself. And I guess I do have some old-fashioned beliefs. I don't know. But yeah, this topic is a tough one. And it does sort of push the limits of what's considered free speech now. This topic has to do with Jewish people, the Israelites, Judaism, and the subject of Lucifer. Now, according to mythological lore, and this is important, there was no angel more beloved by God than Lucifer. Lucifer was the most beloved. And according to the mythology, and according to the Bible, and again, I'm going off of biblical scholars, Lucifer was beautiful. Lucifer is beautiful. Here's the thing. All the fucking versions of Satan you see in the movies, where Satan is some devil thing, goat king looking motherfucker with horns and a crappy goatee and a skin condition and hooves for feet and a little tail and that kind of bullshit. That's not actually Lucifer. That's called Hollywood. Lucifer was beloved by God. Lucifer was God's greatest invention before God created humans. Lucifer was the pinnacle of God's creation before God created humans. That's something to consider. Angels are amazing. I mean, when you think about it, angels are a conduit of infinity. You know, infinity is a concept we like thinking about, like, well, Dan, what is infinite time or infinite space or how big is the universe? Well, let me put it this way. The scholastic scholars, the Christian scholars, like St. Thomas Aquinas of the 12th century and 13th century, they ask some interesting questions. And I've talked about that in the past. Like, can God create a stone so heavy that God cannot lift it? How many angels can fit on the head of a pin? But an interesting question is if an angel must be a conduit for God's infinite power, then what would an angel be made out of? Because you have to imagine an angel would be made out of some pretty tough stuff. I mean, you're essentially talking about a agent of God's will, which means an agent of God's power. And if God's power is infinite, Yeah, so Lucifer was beautiful in the in every way that you can imagine. Lucifer was strong in every way you can imagine. If you imagine Superman, in fact, in some ways, if you want to imagine Lucifer, almost the best and most iconic version would be Superman, but with a dark side. Because here's the thing about Lucifer, and this is kind of related to the core subject of this podcast. Lucifer was the most beloved by God, but Lucifer suspected when God created man that he had competition. And this is a tough one. I mean, I grew up in a big family, okay? I have older siblings, I have younger siblings. And maybe I lucked out because of that. Like growing up in a big family and then falling almost in the middle, I took it for granted that, everyone is screwed. Like maybe in a sense we're all screwed or whatever. But I didn't really get too caught up in the love thing. Like mostly as a kid, I was happy to avoid being yelled at. Like if I could find a place to hide where I wasn't yelled at, that was my main goal as a kid. And I think I did become a bit of a hermit because of that. Like there are different strategies for dealing with parents who, my dad was not physically abusive, but he was a psychological dude. He was a gaslighter. I don't know that he did it on purpose. I now know things about him that lead me to believe he didn't do it on purpose, but he did that. And he was very, very mean. And he could find something of yours, he would needle you with it. Well, I don't think that's the way God is, FYI. But he also had a sense of humor, and he was a trickster, my dad. And he was a good man in his own way, and yeah, he fucked up being a father. I've never been a dad, so it's hard for me to judge too harshly at this point in my life. A lot of people out there are doing the best they can to be parents, and it's got to be hell on earth to try to do the right thing for your kids, especially when you have people saying, oh, you better vaccinate. So the point is, Lucifer, here's God's. Okay, many angels were created by God, but in many ways, even if Lucifer wasn't God's first angel, in terms of creation, he was, and well, he was God's favorite, right? But then came the humans. And when we say the humans, you have to kind of think of the creation story, in my view, from Genesis, and this is just my opinion, as one of many potentially, because there are a lot of issues. Like Adam and Eve, they had Cain and Abel, Cain kills Abel, and then Cain goes off. So there's a lot of kids getting born. The first couple kind of like die or basically run off. And you have to ask, unless it's incest, where are all these other kids coming from? So here's the thing about Genesis. I kind of have to admit to myself that it is one chapter of kind of a parallel story. I mean, God was creating a world of people. So in a way, it's possible and it's difficult to deal with Genesis without accepting the fact that there are other missing chapters. And the Bible, while inspired by God, is still, something that men and women print and write and, copy. And this has happened for centuries. And human beings are not perfect. God is perfect, but human beings are not. So anyways, God creates human beings. And Lucifer looks upon this and it's like, holy crap, I am no longer the favorite because God's spending a lot of time with his human beings. And there you have envy. And envy is terrible. Envy causes people to do terrible things. It's why there are many components of envy baked into the Ten Commandments and many of God's strictures about behavior. You got to be careful about envying or coveting things that other people have because there's a fine line between envy and stealing and lying and killing and raping to get what you want. There really is. In many ways, and it's horrible because there's a movie that's kind of dark that where the character talks about this, but yeah, in many ways, the great crimes begin with obsession. You're obsessed about something you want or you need, and then you commit the crime. And so in many ways, the first sin is uncontrolled obsession. Now, of course, people fall in love and they get crushes, and that's not what I'm talking about. But the actual envying and coveting, where more than wanting something, you feel somebody has something you deserve. That's a very, very different thing. And then you come to the human beings. And here's the thing. Let's put Lucifer on the table for a second. We know what Lucifer did. Lucifer defied God. Lucifer attempted to trick. Well, actually, Lucifer did trick Adam and Eve in the garden. Lucifer was condemned to hell. He was a fallen angel, and there's more than one fallen angel. I've come to realize there's this wider corpus of texts, and many people call it the Apocrypha, but like the Book of Enoch and other books, there are other books out there that are not necessarily wrong. They're just not included in the Bible, and it's worth looking at those books. You got to be careful. You got to be careful. You know, it's like the Council of Nicaea in the 4th century. Here they are trying to figure out what goes in the Bible and what doesn't. And it had to be a tough job. And also, probably there were people there who were corrupt and who were not good Christians, I'll be honest with you. To believe that all the people at the Council of Nicaea were good people working there for God, I think is really to misunderstand the history of Christianity. But there are books out there that deal with these issues, and so they're worth looking at. Anyways, getting back to our friend, the human being, the early humans, and let's just say the Israelites. Let's just move the timeline up, and let's not talk about the salamanders and the chimpanzees and all the Darwinian bullshit some Christians get wrapped around, but I do not, because I am cosmologically agnostic. Let's fast forward to the Israelites. The Israelites are God's chosen people. Now, let me tell you something. I never quite understood the concept of being God's chosen people until I started reading the Old Testament. But you barely make it to the Promised Land, and already you suspect that, wow, these people, God has pretty much got their back almost all the time. They can do no wrong. I mean, there are limits. Of course, there's Korah's rebellion, and I bring this up a lot. Korah's rebellion, I think it's chapter 16, it could be chapter 14, but Korah's rebellion in the book of Numbers. And this is during the period of the flight, you know, from Egypt when they're in the wilderness. And, you know, like so many times, some Israelites start preaching bullshit and causing problems and bitching and moaning because they don't get as many things as they want from God. Moses has lost his shit and is totally impatient and pissed off at these, you know, disbelievers. And Moses asks God to do the work, and God opens the earth and swallows up Dathan and a bunch of other people and their families. So yeah, God can be pushed to the point vis-a-vis the Israelites, where God is just saying, listen, I'm tired. I just got home from work. I want a beer. 15 minutes ago, I freed you from fucking Pharaoh, and here you are fucking things up again. I'm through with it. My favorite Lucifer can deal now with my chosen people. Bam. There you go. If you read the Old Testament and you keep reading it, and there are many themes. You know, the great thing about the Bible is you can read it straight through, or you can crack it open, because it is so dense. A lot of intellectuals will poo-poo the Bible and say, holy crap, this is so stupid. This is a child's story. If you approach the Bible from that perspective, A, you probably never read it, and B, there's something wrong with you. There's a lot going on. But the point is, there's many themes, but there is this kind of theme around this issue. Around, you know, the Israelites being the chosen people, and how they constantly, at almost every opportunity, screw up. And yet they're continuously the chosen people. God never abandons them, even during the period of the Babylonian captivity. And when I say Babylonian captivity, there were many empires that came into the Promised Land, that came into Palestine and Canaan and that area of the world, and they did abduct Jewish people. I mean, here's the thing. It is clear to me that in the ancient world, the Hebrew people were cherished as very smart people too, and often wise and intelligent, and God was on their side. This is the thing. Word gets around, okay? word gets around. If people think that your people are beloved by some god, I mean, these are a lot of these other cultures, they have different gods or they're polytheists. But the point is, even amongst the heathens and the heretics, word gets around. And people will say, I've heard of these people. So yes, there was a period of time when the Assyrian Empire and the Persian Empire, and ultimately, I think the Seleucids and others would abduct the Jewish people. It's generally called the Babylonian captivity, and it starts roughly, and I'm saying roughly, in the 6th century BC. But even during the Babylonian captivity, okay, and read your Jeremiah to talk about the reasons for it and why it was justified, but even during that period, God did not abandon his chosen people. Daniel in the lion's den. I mean, it's not just because he's my namesake, but think about it. Read the book of Daniel. Daniel was an advisor to these heretical people that believed in false gods and that would constantly tempt him. I mean, here's a guy who was probably doing a really good job, and if his hosts had been smart, they would have let him just do a good job and be who he wanted to be. But I'm sure his host felt, well, he's so good at his job, why can't we make him like us? Why can't we convince him to do the sinful things that we do? And it was like Daniel said, I'll do the work and I'll give you good advice. And if there's ever a floating disembodied hand on the wall writing shit, I will say, holy crap, look at the writing on the wall. You should read that. The age of iron, blah, 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 the age of this, age of this is all good info. Even in captivity, God was still there. Daniel could be thrown into an oven and you could turn it up to 11 and Daniel would be fine. Daniel could be thrown into a pit with lions and Daniel's okay. But here's the thing, like Lucifer, a day came, and some of their prophets saw this, Ezekiel, Isaiah. I think Jeremiah saw this. I think if you read Jeremiah, and again, that's a book I go back to again and again. If you read Jeremiah, I think Jeremiah saw this. I think Isaiah saw this. Ezekiel saw this. The wisdom of the later period, before the appearance of Christ, they saw this. They saw that a new covenant was coming, a new agreement. It wasn't just going to be about the Israelites. And because of this, and this is the thing, you could think of the Israelites in many ways like how you could think of Eden. There was a bigger universe probably outside of Eden, in terms of the universe, like the world itself. Like there was this huge world, and then there's Eden, but we were expelled from paradise into the outer world. Okay, so outside of the chosen people, there were other humans. They did exist. It wasn't like God abandoned them. God probably gave everybody the same kinds of choices, and ultimately people made choices. And this is not a racist thing. This isn't about, you know, if someone is genetically Phoenician or Semitic, that somehow they're better. Because, listen, genetically, the Phoenicians were genetically equivalent, more or less, to the ancient Hebrews. I think that's basically a true statement. So this idea that it's a genetic thing is total bullshit. But they were God's chosen people, and I say were because that's past tense. Because with Jesus Christ dying on the cross, everyone can be saved. Christ died for all of our sins, not just the Hebrew people, but every people. Asian people, Indian people, Japanese people, Polynesian people, you find a human being on planet Earth and Christ died so that they could be saved and live forever with love, with God. But here's the thing, people get envious. So before I go too far, I just need to say, I believe, I mean, I'm a Christian, so I meditate on this issue. I got lots of issues I meditate on. One of the issues I meditate on, separate topic, is homosexuality, because I've known gay people in my life who are decent people. I think they were probably gay from almost when they were born. And so I have a hard time thinking to myself, well, if a person is gay, therefore they're going to hell. On the other hand, I am not a huge fan of people turning their private parts, their junk, into the basis of any political platform or identity. In general, beyond the fact that we know there's male and female, blah, 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 that's a reality. But in terms of the way that the junk has driven people insane, how many genders they think they have, it's crazy. But I meditate on this because, well, on the one hand, I respect people's right to be who they are. And as long as they're doing sexual stuff with other adults who are voluntarily doing it as adults, not with animals, not abusing children, but just adults doing weird stuff in the privacy of their weird home, it may not be quote unquote Christian what they end up doing, but as long as they're not harming each other, harming animals, or harming children, and they're just adults, I truly don't give a fuck what they do. It's their fucking business. But I meditate on this because in the Bible, there is in Leviticus, okay, and I have another podcast about this. There is in Leviticus this stricture against men and men having sex. Now, as I said, you kind of have to think of Leviticus like the reboot of Battlestar Galactica. You have a city of people who are on the run, and it's a city, not, just a small tribe. So, yeah, anyways. But I meditate on this. So, do I think that there are good Hebrew people, Jewish people, or people of the Jewish faith, and that they could go to heaven even though Christ appeared? I meditate on this. On the one hand, I think that this is God's judgment, so God gets to decide. So, that's good news. The good news for me is I don't have to decide that. It's not my job. On the other hand, I think there are pretenders of all faiths, and Christianity and Judaism have pretenders, have people who say, I'm a Jew, I'm a Christian. That doesn't make them a Jew or a Christian. If someone comes along and says they're a Jew or a Christian, that does not imply that statement is true. John, the book of John, and there's more than one book, but I believe in the first book of John, it could be the second book, he discusses this issue of the Antichrist. And the Antichrist in this book of John is not the son of Satan. The Antichrist is actually someone that pretends to be a Christian and teaches a message that is fundamentally heretical and false and spreads dismay and spreads lies about Christ. That is the Antichrist. So there are Christians in the world who say they are Christians, but they're really not. Okay? So before I go too far on this issue of the chosen people, I don't believe that Jews are bad people because they're Jews. I do think there are bad people who are Jews, just as I think there are bad people who are Christians and people who are black and people who are white. The color of your skin and what kind of junk you have and how you feel about your junk probably has nothing to do with whether or not you're good or bad. But I also have to admit to myself that there's a lot of strange phenomena around the issue of Judaism. And Israel as a nation, I don't think they're a good actor. I will say Israel reminds me of Old Testament Israel in the following sense, like from the book of Judges. In fact, the Israel of today reminds me of the Jews getting to the Promised Land and what they basically settle into, which is a lot of bullshit. The book of Judges is like every other chapter, every other paragraph, God is sending a savior, sending, or I should say choosing a implementer of justice, saying, hey Gideon, hey Deborah, hey Barak, hey dude, I'm going to give you a sword of justice. Go free the Israelites again from the Midianites or the Philistines or the Canaanites, or whatever group of people are out there, I'm going to help you. And then 15 minutes after God helps the Israelites, they're worshiping Baal again. And this is, like I said, a story of the Bible. It is a story. If you want to know if God has chosen a people, ask yourself how tolerant you would be. Let's say your kid is playing with matches. And boy, this is a good analogy, because whether it's the fallen angels or the building a fucking Tower of Babel, this is a really good comparison. Or any of the other stupid shit. Hey, God, give us a fucking king. What the fuck? Samuel and God were shaking their head that day. Let's say you had a kid that loved to play with matches. And this kid wasn't necessarily the worst kid in the world, but they did have this one fault. could be a girl, could be a boy. I don't like this idea of raising kids with no gender identity, but whatever. My point is, you have a kid and your kid likes to play with fucking matches. And then every day, it seems like, or every week, let's say every week, there's an incident. And it could be a garbage can set on fire. It could be, you know, tying a burning rag or a burning piece of paper to the tail of a cat, you know, with a little bit of string, because you want to be a little bit, you know, you don't want to be that mean, right? Because then you're like a serial killer. Anyways, my point is, this kid is playing with matches and every week getting in trouble, and the kid sometimes hurts his or herself, in addition to causing some damage. And the parent comes along and says, you know what? And the first thing the parent does is helps, okay? The first thing the parent does is puts out the fire and helps soothe the pain. And then comes the punishment. And it's like, don't do this again. And the kid says and cries and says, I won't do this again, I promise. And then next week, something else gets set on fire. That is one of the themes of the Old Testament. That is one of the themes of the Israelites and the humans in general. Humans in general. This isn't about being Jewish. This is about Dan. You know the guy talking to you right now? God has given me many, many things. God has helped me. Even when I was an atheist, I look back at some of the spooky, weird stuff that's happened to me, and I have to admit, I think God was there. Okay, but does that mean, especially when I was an atheist, that I woke up the next day and said, well, thank goodness for God? No, especially as an atheist, it was like, I just had some good luck. I was fortunate, okay? The universe was kind. Probability was kind. That's how I used to treat it. I didn't treat it as an opportunity given to me by God. It was more like random fortunate chance. 15 minutes later, and the chosen people are looking for Baal, looking for a false idol, looking for something else to worship, looking for a shiny king they can put on a shiny throne, because they're not really thankful for the help they've received. You know, they're not really. But yeah. About 40 years later, it's always 40 years, and they're deep in the worship of Baal. And yet, God does not abandon them. And then Jesus does arrive. And that's the thing. It's like God is looking at the human race and providing these opportunities. And then here's this opportunity beyond the chosen people. But if you're the chosen people and you look at this opportunity, and you're already ungrateful in so many ways, you're already people who basically God will help, and then 15 minutes or 15, in God time, 15 milliseconds later, the way God's time works, you're looking for a false idol, you're looking for B-A-A-L. How do you look at Jesus in that context? How does Jesus look to you? Does Jesus look like a savior to help you, or does Jesus look like another situation where you're going to get upset? And this may be the worst insult, because for so long you could say to yourself, well, at least we're the chosen people. This is the thing. If you were the tribe that was chosen for all time and was receiving the kind of historic help that would lead others to want to maybe destroy your country, but abduct you, like it was almost as if, think about the Babylonian captivity. There's a long history of destroying cultures in the ancient world. So the fact that these invaders didn't just obliterate Israel is interesting. The fact that they abducted the people is interesting, okay? The story of people being abducted and the ship being destroyed, it's usually kill all the people and take the shit. It's not, you know, destroy the temple, take the artifacts, keep them safe, and take a bunch of people with you, and then try to, like, let some people live back home. That's not the typical story. So these are people that were so revered for having been chosen by their God, even for the people that worship false gods, that people were afraid to just murder them all. Because if we don't know our Bible, for them it was the current events. And they knew the current events. They knew that God, yeah, the Hebrew God, the God of Israel, was a vicious, vicious God. I don't mean that in a bad way, but yeah, when God gets angry, God can do some terrible things. And then comes Jesus, and Jesus changes things, and Jesus says that all of us are, can be saved. It doesn't mean we are saved. We have to find faith. We have to try to live according to the principles, and we have to seek forgiveness, and we have to be willing to forgive. And I've just listed a lot of things I'm not very good at. Think about the way that the Israelites behaved. Like, the Israelites were given lots of chances, especially in the age of Abraham, in the Genesis, but in other books as well, where they confronted enemies. And there were two paths. One path is revenge. You know, the enemy did something, so let's just kill all their people. And the other path is, well, maybe we can, you know, punish the people that deserve it, but maybe we just don't murder everybody. In fact, maybe we should look for peace. And I think if you look at the Old Testament, there are lots of places where they could have tried to find peace, but instead it was revenge. And I think God went along with that. And I kind of understand in a way, because this is like, you know, free will is funny, but free will is the case of where if you give someone the ability to make choices, you want them to make the right choices and not just set shit on fire. But listen, it's a learning process. And a lot of it was, listen, we were hurt, so we're going to hurt somebody else. Christ came along and said, you know what, we kind of need to stop doing that. I'm not saying that there isn't evil. Christ did not come to say there is no evil. Christ did not arrive to say that there was no devil, that we should not do battle with evil. Christ was not a pacifist against evil. Christ merely proposed that human beings should treat each other differently, to have faith in God and to follow the golden rule with respect to each other, to follow the principles of do unto others as you would have them do unto you, and to be decent and true, and not to abandon the strictures of the Old Testament, but to realize there's a new covenant, and it's for everybody. Everyone, not just the Israelites. This is the crux of it. I know this has been a long road on this podcast, and you're saying, Dan, you've had too much coffee. You probably want to get more coffee before the podcast is over. But here we get to the crux of it. We're talking about a people, a group of people that were chosen and beautiful and amazing and helped along the way and inspired in the same way that Lucifer was. And at the moment you could make the choice, am I a Jew or am I a child of God? Because that was essentially the choice. You didn't have to abandon who you were as a Jewish person. All you had to do was say, yes, Jesus came here to save me, but also Jesus came here to save everyone. That's a big thing. It's one thing to embrace your God as your master, as your Lord, and to serve your God. It's a whole nother thing to embrace the idea that other people might have a right of their own birthright to do the same. So when I look at the modern state of Israel, and I look at the question of, is there some Jewish conspiracy? I don't get into that. That to me does get borderline anti-Semitic, and I don't really think it's that simple. But do I think there are people who claim to be Jewish and claim to be Christian and claim to be other things and who do operate at the highest levels of power? Do I think that there are people who claim to be these things but are actually just representing Satan? Yes. Yes, I do. There is a church of Satan. There is a synagogue of Satan. There are people who claim to be Christians and claim to be Jews, but they're really working for the devil. I am 100% convinced of that. It's one of the reasons why I'm incredibly skeptical of the papacy. I'm not saying that every Catholic is evil or bad. I think that there are Christians who are also Catholic, but I don't think the Catholic Church is a Christian church. I just think that, yeah, there are Christians who luck out and they get a priest and they find a church where God's word is properly taught and they can be around people who actually are there for God. But there's, to me, a big part of the papacy has nothing to do with God. The Catholic Church has nothing to do with God. Listen, there are, and this is the thing, I'm not a biblical scholar, but I am inspired to say, if you read Revelations and you read the various parts of the Bible, a lot of it in the Old Testament that deal with prophecy, and I'm still coming to understand this, there is a theme about deception, deceivers. Deceivers. I just don't mean the deceiver, which is Lucifer. I mean all the little petty deceivers. You see, the thing about Jesus Christ, the Son of God, is when Jesus Christ came along, it was an opportunity for the whole human race to be saved, but it was also an opportunity for a lot of people to be doomed. A lot of people, because Satan was going to come along and say, oh, Satan's a great whisperer, a great convincer. Satan is the greatest liar. Don't believe the bullshit from some TV show. Of all Satan's gifts, his gift's ability to lie is impressive. And all great lies contain a little bit of truth. They do. The best lies always contain a little bit of truth. And Satan always knew this, and Satan was great at lying. When Christ came along, it was like an opportunity for Satan. Like, listen, listen, Israelite, look at this. Look at this upstart. Look at this pretender. Look at this fake. This fake calls himself the Son of God. This fake claims this kind of mythical tale of how he was born, and he has these disciples that follow him around. He does miracles. But come on, these miracles must be bullshit. You need to recognize that God loves you and only you. God doesn't like Romans. God doesn't like Greeks. God doesn't like people from, you know, Persia. God doesn't like Egyptians. God doesn't like anybody but you. You are the chosen people. And how could this person come along and claim that that is false? And then all of a sudden, the devil, Satan, gets an army, gets a lot of people on his side, because ultimately this is the crux of it. You know, there are people, I believe there are Jewish people today who are just truly just practicing the faith, and they don't feel any envy, okay? This is important. I think there are Jewish people today who practice the faith, and they don't wake up in the morning and say, damn those Christians, they stole our God, and then they pretended, and now they're all bullshit. I think there are Jewish people who wake up every day just like good Christians do, good Jewish people, good Christians, and say, I just want to live a good life, and I'd like to do so with respect to God. I actually believe that's true. Now, I also think that there are some people who will listen to this podcast, and because we become so addled as a society, will claim it's anti-Semitic. It's really not. I have nothing against people who are genetically related to the Phoenician people. That's what Semite means, is you have that genetic lineage that joins you to the Semitic people. So I am not anti-Semitic. I'm also not anti-Jew. But I do think there are people who call themselves Jews who are not. And I think there are Christians who call themselves Christians who are not. And this only gets worse in this day and age we're living in. This only gets worse from here. And so in many ways, this is also the source. You know, when they talk about criminal theory, you know, means, motive, and opportunity, right? And I know that motive is complicated, but sometimes motive for a crime is very fucking simple. And like I said, often starts with obsession. Because if you're the chosen people, I mean, read Psalms, read Proverbs, read Job. In Job, in the misery of Job, in the torture of Job, in the sadness of Job, there is this fundamental thing that Job loved God. Even as God was allowing the devil to torture Job, Job was obsessively, deeply in love with God. And great crimes begin with that. And so if you're a people or an angel that feels they have been spurned by God, I mean, think about it. God created the universe. If you feel, though it's false, I mean, here's the thing. God never stopped loving Lucifer because God was creating man. That was Lucifer's idea. That was Lucifer's paranoia. God didn't stop loving Jewish people because God sent his only son. That was the problem of some Jewish people. Okay, that was demented. But that doesn't mean that some didn't feel that way, and then many did also. Lucifer felt spurned by God, and because he felt this way, it was like, holy crap, the most important being in the universe that created every single thing, including me, loves something else more than he loves me. And then the Israelite says, holy crap, the most incredible infinite being in the universe, infinity upon infinity, had loved us for thousands of years. And now he has sent a prophet and a savior and his only son to tell the world that he is here to save us all. That now all human beings really have always been chosen. That this is the true message. If you felt that you were spurned by, that you were let down by, that you were dumped, and believe me, I've been dumped, so I know what that feels like. If you feel like God dumped you, or said, it's not you, it's me. And again, this wasn't what God was doing, but this was the perception. This was the demented thought. This was the paranoia. And this is what led to the obsessive hatred. So if you wanted to look at the world today and say to yourself, where is the motive for evil? Well, the motive is really quite fucking simple. And truly, in so many ways, it's always been about this. It's about love. And different kinds of love, but ultimately the love of God. And if all of a sudden you find out that God might love everyone, and that actually, no matter how much God loves you, you can screw up to the point where you don't get to go to heaven. In fact, if you don't have faith, you're going to go to hell. If you realize that now all of a sudden the rules are going to be very fair and for everybody, the covenant is very simple and it is for everybody, yeah, then all of a sudden it looks different. And then all of a sudden you're not so special. But really, how are you less so? You see, this is the thing. This is how paranoia and darkness and evil seeps in. The great lies, the greatest lies in history are peppered with truth. It is true that God created the angels. It is true that God created humans after the angels. It is true that God gave humans amazing gifts and probably one or two things angels don't have. I don't quite know what those things are yet. I mean, in a sense, maybe it is our mortality, but really, we are immortal in our soul, so it's something I meditate on. But do I think God, if you took a random angel, and then you took me and said, does God love me more than random angel Jim? You know, if there was an angel named Jim, or Bob, or Pete, or Mary, or Sigma 12 Epsilon, if Sigma 12 Epsilon angel was sitting next to me and I was sitting, could I say truly that God loves me more than the angel? I haven't come across those passages in the Bible yet. So I guess what I'm saying is this was all in Lucifer's head. Lucifer, the most beautiful. Lucifer, the most powerful. Remember, angels are a conduit of God's power. So if you can imagine something strong enough to hold God's power, that's what an angel is. Lucifer was beautiful and strong and powerful and believed he was, and he was. Amongst angels, there's reason to believe the mythology that he was the favorite. It's funny, though. It doesn't seem like it bothered all the other angels, but it bothered, you know, that Lucifer was the favorite. Maybe it did. We'll never know. But what is the case is Lucifer felt dumped when he found out that it was possible that God could love things that weren't angels. It was like he didn't have an issue that he was the most beloved angel. But this idea that God could love something like an angel, he could love something else. And I think the Israelites went through the same process. And I think part of this problem we're confronting in these discussions, especially around the modern state of Israel, I know in previous podcasts, I compare Israel to a golem. And a golem is a mythological figure created by, you know, a rabbi practicing ancient Kabbalah magic, utilizing Hebrew to take a man made out of clay and sticks and turn it into a monster so that it can seek out and punish and exact vengeance. That's what a golem is. And if you look at where Zionism came from, if you look at the history of how Jewish people were treated in European history, there's tons of persecution. You have to admit this. Jews have been persecuted, and Jews have enclaved, and Jews have sequestered themselves. And in a way, the response to the Holocaust very much could have been a golem. You know, you have this horrible event, this horrible, terrible event. Because at this point, guys, I got to tell you something. I have gone through a lot of transformations. There are things I believe as a historian must be true, because if they were false, then I have to basically go to a place I don't want to go. So I'm not going to go to this place of Holocaust denial. I think that that's something I can't allow myself to believe. It's not simply that I spent so much money studying history in college or graduate school. It isn't cognitive dissonance or something like that. It's more like, for me to believe that we've been lied to that extent, I just can't accept it. So I accept that the Holocaust is real. And imagine the shock upon a people of that, a close-knit community of people, knowing the horrors of families being slaughtered, entire communities being destroyed, murdered, gassed. 6 million people wiped out, along with a lot of other people, along with Polish people, along with gay people, along with a lot of the freaks and the quote-unquote losers of European history being sent to the gas chamber. So yeah, when I think of the modern state of Israel, I think of a golem. But in terms of this issue of why would there be a Jewish conspiracy against Christian people, well, I don't think we're talking about Jews. I think we're talking about people who pretend to be Jews, but they're essentially the people that follow the whisper of the devil. The whisper that says, well, you're special, and no one else has a right to be special. You know that, don't you? You're special just like me. That's what Lucifer whispers to people. You're special just like me, and God does not love you just like me. But I love you, man. And that gets us to the end of this podcast, because that's the lie that suckers people who get upset because they think that God doesn't love them as much as God loves other people. Let me let you in a little secret here. That's the crux of it right there. You get suckered into this, and people get suckered into this. A lot of the atheism, in some ways, I think, is about this attitude that if you were born with a tragedy, and listen, I have not lived the most tragic life. People, believe me, this is what I mean when I said earlier that I think God was there for me in many times, many ways, I just didn't notice. I've had a lot of good luck in my life. I've screwed it up, made bad choices, but I've had good luck. But there are people who are born with great difficulties, great disabilities, great challenges, and some of them will choose to just say, either there is no God or I hate God, because why would God ruin my life? And I don't want to get into the issue of what men do and what God does. Listen, men, human beings, are committing tragedies against the planet Earth every fucking day. They are polluting the water. They are polluting the air. We are polluting the soil. We are polluting our ability to survive. Okay, so if a child is born with autism, I don't blame God. I blame man. But that is the key. If you want to understand this issue, it is that whisper in your ear that you in particular, who have suffered this tragedy, you in particular, who thought you were special before God, guess what? You're not the only person in the world. And there are other people that might need God's help. And maybe the challenges you face are part of your story, and you don't understand it yet. This isn't to say you should give up. Part of this also is whatever you can do to survive, whatever you can do to fight back, whatever you can do to stand on your feet, that's also what God asks you to do. God asks me to stand on my feet. I get pissed off about this evil fucking world every day of the week. And I feel like giving up almost every day of the week. But that is the riddle, isn't it? You know, you get out of the envy space, you get out of the judging space, you get out of the, woe is me and fuck everybody space, and you get to the space of how can I survive? How can I become a better person in a world that, yeah, is still just as messed up, but how can I maybe be on the good side? But that's the thing about spurned lovers and love. That's the thing about feeling like you're the most beautiful thing that God created, and all of a sudden God is creating these things called humans, and fuck, maybe I'm not so special any longer. That's the thing about being the chosen people and then finding out, crap, you know, there's a guy that claims to be God's son, and he's telling that everyone is chosen. All humans have a chance. Anyways, this has been a kind of a big podcast with a heavy theme for Saturday night. And maybe it's because tomorrow is Sunday in church, and I don't know. But something to think about. Just because someone calls themselves something doesn't mean they're that. Just because they call themselves a Christian or a Jew doesn't mean they worship God. It's just something to consider.